time.
What time is it?
Time for the show about people.
No, it's not a witch hunt, Bill. This is a serious problem in our culture.
Politics.
We will disagree, we will argue, and we will come to some sort of a conclusion.
And just plain fun.
I'm a first-time caller, and I'm just cracking up because this is hilarious.
Fox News analyst.
She's the vice president of Family Pack Federal.
Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk, and this is Memorial Day. To listen to more of that, because that's Stars and Stripes Forever. If ever there were American songs, those are they. That's John Philip Sousa. He was an American composer who wrote so many marches and really was a uniquely American sound. If anyone ever asks you what it means to be an American and what it sounds like and feels like, it really is exemplified in the music of John Philip Sousa. This is Sandy Rios in the morning again, and we are here to celebrate all of you war heroes, any of you who put on the uniform and marched into battle on behalf of this country. We give you the deepest thanks. You know, I think back to a quote by John Quincy Adams, who said once, "You will never know how much it cost my generation to preserve your freedom. I hope you make good use of it." Well, I guess the jury's out, isn't it, as to whether we've made good use of it. There is a special on television right now about the spies, Washington spies, called Turn. Pretty violent, pretty interesting, but it traces, you know, some of the sacrifices of those early years, and it really is a very good thing to be reminded what they went through. It's just an amazing thing what they did in order to make it possible for us to be free. And then moving on into the other generations, after that we had all of the casualties of the Civil War, people going to battle to save the country, to make sure it stayed unified, and also to make sure that men were free. It really is a remarkable story, as hundreds of thousands of men in the North and the South gave their lives in this terrible conflict. And then if we go to the Spanish-American War, less known, but still a war, World War I, horrible casualties, terrible stories of men who fought. World War II, the great threat of Nazism and the spread of totalitarianism around the globe. And many of our fathers marched into that battle. And we're going to talk about that in just a second. And then Vietnam. Many of your fathers were in Vietnam, your husbands, your uncles, and you remember the sacrifices that they made. And, of course, there was also Korea, which was a battle that some of us still had family members who fought in that great battle, kind of the unsung. That, by the way, the memorial here in D.C., one of the ones that I love the most is the Korean War Memorial. If you haven't been to that, it is absolutely beautiful. But Desert Storm, and then, of course, Iraq. Some of you are listening now, and you've lost sons. And Iraq, of course, is in the news. Many of you have lost limbs and have been injured. But you know that there have been tremendous sacrifices made by our men and women to save us and to make us free. And so today we want to remember that, and we would like to remember you. We're going to do that in a little different way. You know, the tradition of remembering our fallen soldiers started about 150 years ago, and it's really an interesting story. I'm going to go back to a Memorial Day that we pre-taped, of Memorial Day 2 years ago, March May of 2013, because I want to repeat a few things that I said on that day, but also because it was a day when my father-in-law, who was very much part of the battles of World War II, as was my father, and I'll talk about that in this pre-tape, was in a hospital bed fighting for his life. But he was aware that day when this show aired. He was aware, and we decorated his room with flags. We decorated his food tray, and we brought in the radio and turned it on so that he could hear this special broadcast that we did for him. My husband joined me in the studio, and so we're going to replay that for you today for Wally Rather, who was my father-in-law, and I hope that you will enjoy. But meanwhile, back on Memorial Day of 2013, this is how it sounded. You know, Memorial Day, though, really is to celebrate those that have given their lives in the service of their country, and it started during the Civil War. After the Civil War, you know, there were so many casualties. That war was just took hundreds of thousands of lives. It's just an amazing a number. And so they began to sort of decorate the graves and memorialize, remember. They didn't want to forget what they had done. Remember what Abraham Lincoln said at Gettysburg? The world will not long remember, but will never forget their sacrifice. They didn't want to forget. So following President Lincoln's assassination in April of 1865, they did a lot of things to commemorate, and it was the first well-known observance of Memorial Day that particular year, and that happened in Charleston, South Carolina in May of 1865. Now, there's a real interesting story about this. This was, I just think this is real interesting. Union soldiers, I'm reading this, by the way, from Wikipedia. That's my reliable source, but sometimes they get things right. During the war, Union soldiers who were prisoners of war had been held at the Charleston Racecourse. At least 257 Union prisoners died there and were hastily buried in unmarked graves. Together with teachers and missionaries, blacks in Charleston organized a May Day celebration in 1865, which was covered by the New York Tribune. And they called it Martyrs of the Race. And this was a description of that day by a witness. This was the first Memorial Day. African Americans invented Memorial Day in Charleston, South Carolina. What you have there is black Americans recently freed from slavery, announcing to the world with their flowers, their feet, and their songs what the war had been about. What they were creating was the Independence Day of a second American Revolution. So that's what we're celebrating this weekend. I know many of you will be spending time with your families. It wasn't until the 1960s when America declared that Memorial Day, rather than falling on a random date, would happen on a Monday, which would give Americans a three-day holiday to celebrate. So that's why we do this. And I thought it would be really a good pause in all that we are doing to just stop and remember what our men and women have done. Today, we are going to remember the sacrifice of our service people in every branch. Well, I've asked someone very special to join me this morning because his father will be 88 just in a few weeks, and was a World War II hero. He is actually in a hospital, very sick, can't tell his own story. But there is a very dramatic story that we want to tell you that he experienced in the course of his service. And the person that I've asked to join me this morning is my husband, Bruce Rather. Hi, Bruce.
Good morning.
How are you, honey?
I'm very well. Thank you.
This part we're going to dedicate to your dad, who is tougher than nails, you know?
He really is. Very soft-spoken, but yet very just full of stoutness.
Now, you know, you and I both grew up with dads who served in the war. My dad was in Patton's 3rd Army. He was an Army Corps of Engineers, and I've got lots of stories to tell about my father who's no longer here. But I want to concentrate on your dad this morning because how decorated is he?
Well, he has a Purple Heart. He has a Bronze Star. He was wounded twice. He had frozen feet. He participated in the Battle of the Bulge, and as so many that did, he had his feet frozen. And to this day, when he gets in very cold temperatures, his feet still split open.
And that's just from wearing those boots and having them just freeze in the course of being out in the exposed. He got frostbite, and so he's had that his whole life.
Yes.
But there was another situation that I think is just a really interesting story, Bruce. What was your dad doing? What was his part? What job did he do?
Well, he was a mortar man in the 35th Infantry of the U.S. Army, and he worked in a team. There was always three people in the mortar team, one to load, one to aim, and one to observe. And he was with his best friend, whose last name was Gettler. And this man, Gettler, is a typical story of somebody you hear. He was a minor league pitcher for the White Sox organization before going into the service. He was like the county hero for his athletic prowess in Northwest Indiana. And as people of that high school class, 43, like my dad, they all went into the service and went to the war. And anyway, he was with his friend Gettler in a foxhole, and they were setting up their mortar, and they were out in front of a woods, and the rest of their company was behind them, giving them supporting fire, and the Germans zeroed in on the foxhole that my dad and Gettler were sitting in, firing their mortar, and they dropped a round right in front of the hole. It exploded. Then the Germans dropped another round, and it hit right behind the hole that they were in. And they looked at each other and said, the next one's going to come right in the hole here. We better get out of here and get back with our guys. They jumped up out of the hole, and my dad went right, and Gettler went left, and they headed back for the woods behind them. And when they got there, my dad had made it, and Gettler had not. As soon as he jumped up out of the hole, he was killed by a rifle round.
Bruce, didn't like a huge percentage of your dad's platoon get killed? Wasn't he one of the few survivors?
Yeah, I think out of the original, like, 140-some men, there were only 7 of them that survived.
All right, so he goes back. The war ends. We'll skip ahead because I think this is pretty interesting. And many years transpired. And what happened? There was an intersection with their stories once again.
Yes. My brother lives in Northwest Indiana, and somehow that name, Gettler, is very prominent where my brother lives. And my dad had gone after the war to tell this person's family what had happened to their son. And it just so happened that when my dad was down visiting my brother, and the Historical Society for that area was doing oral histories of World War II. And they put two and two together that my dad had known the Gettler from the county, and they interviewed him and got this story amongst others.
But before that, you skipped over this, but he did then go see the Gettler family after the war.
He did.
And told them how their son had died.
He did. When he went home, my dad Wally was living in Wisconsin, and so on his way home, he went through Indiana, and he stopped at the home of this fellow that had been killed with him to let them know exactly what had happened to their son and how brave he had been.
Yeah, and you think about that, Bruce. This is Memorial Day weekend. That family lost their son so many years ago. Just think what a blow that was. And that was the story times thousands of so many veterans in World War II. You know, I think of my father, two stories come to mind with him. I remember him telling me about being on the back of a truck, one of those troop trucks where they sit sideways, you know, and they're being transported and jostled around. They're sitting, you know, real close together. And a strafe plane came down, and they saw it coming. And it just started leveling bullets, and they hit the truck. My dad jumped out. He said, but before he jumped out, he said, both guys, one on one side and one on the other side of him, fell over. Both were killed on either side of him. And how that impacted him. And then he jumped out of the truck, you know, and he had lived. And that, I don't think he ever forgot that.
In talking to people that have those kind of experiences, like we've just outlined, I think that's one of the hardest things is that question of why me? Why did I make it? And I think that's why a lot of these people don't like talking about these things. Is it they feel guilty almost that they survived and so many others that they were with did not survive.
I think that's true. I also think that they're just tough, Bruce. You and I have talked about this. They didn't complain. I mean, we have come into a, you know, kind of a time in our country where we all feel sorry for each other, and all of us, we feel sorry for ourselves, and we vent everything. We, you know, we have to just spill everything. And these men, your dad and my dad, were lions of another breed.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think that's very refreshing about the people that are serving now, because they really do, I hate to say it, but I think so many people have no idea that we even have troops in war zones right now. They're just going about their lives. And these men and women serve, and they serve selflessly. And it's a real tribute to them that they're not in a war like World War II where everyone's pitching in. They're sort of doing it out of the sense of duty that they have and not worrying about what the people at home are thinking.
Yeah, that's actually a fabulous point. And I think I see the same kind of toughness in the guys serving now. You don't hear them whining. And if anybody had reason to whine for the reasons you just gave, they have it. You know, think about this new story this week of Nadal Hassan making almost $300,000 from the government. He's the shooter at Fort Hood. While the soldiers who were shot are, you know, just barely subsisting and cannot get the kinds of benefits that soldiers in the war zone get. They're really wounded in many ways, not only physically but emotionally. And it's just such an injustice. But they're not really whining. They're reporting it. Some of them are reporting it. But I think American soldiers are tough. We are proud of our heritage. We are proud of all of you who have served. And I personally would just love to hear your stories this morning about some experience that you had. What was a dramatic experience? Maybe somebody that you remember that you served with. Or maybe it was your father or your mother. Or your husband who served, and you have a story to tell, we would love to hear it. Our phone number is 888-589-8840, 888-589-8840. Bruce, I'm thinking about my own father. I remember he was an engineer who built bridges across the rivers to let the troops go over. And I remember once he was on a boat, and he said the Germans were firing from one side of the riverbank, the Rhine, and the Americans were firing from the other, and they were caught in the crossfire, one of the scariest moments of his experience in the war. But we're proud of our dads, aren't we?
Yes, we are.
And we want to say thank you to Mr. Rather, who I hope will be listening. He will be 88 in June, and he has served his country faithfully. We are proud of you, Mr. Rather, and we wanted to make sure that you knew that this morning. God bless and keep you, and you just left a great legacy. I'm sort of enjoying that legacy, one of your sons, so I hope you're having a wonderful day, and we're just going to do this today. We're not going to talk about the news. We're going to celebrate the service of our veterans and remember those who paid the ultimate price. Phone number is 888-589-8840. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk. Well, that was Memorial Day of 2013, and as I described before, that tribute that we played on 2013, we had the radio put in my father-in-law, Walter Rather's, room so that he could listen. He was certainly able to talk to us, and he enjoyed it so thoroughly. We decorated his room in red, white, and blue. And 6 weeks later, on July 24th of 2013, Private First Class Walter Rather left this world, but not without us thanking him thoroughly for his service to our country and telling him how much we loved him and how proud we were of him. And that brings me to our next the next thing we want to do. You know, there are something like 16 million men who served in World War II. There are only, I'm sure this stat is not up to date, but when this was printed, there were 855,070 of them alive, and with an average of 492 of them dying each and every day. And so with that in mind, we want to bring a tribute to you that I think is just beautiful, that was created by someone who wanted to honor the World War II veterans. And certainly we do not intend in any way to excuse or denigrate the service of all of the rest of you listening who've served in various wars. But these are our oldest veterans, and they're the ones that are leaving us the fastest. So indulge us today if I emphasize those particular veterans who are by and large in their 90s and are leaving us faster than we can, you know, they're leaving us. And so as much as we can honor them, we want to do that. So when we return, I want to play for you a tribute to World War II veterans that is just beautiful. Stay tuned. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
You're listening to a best of edition of Sandy Rios in the Morning on AFR Talk.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
I'm glad it happened. I think Jim Comey, you know, way back almost a year ago, kind of forgot he was the FBI director. And rather than stand up and tell the American people that the Attorney General wouldn't allow a grand jury investigation to actually do a thorough investigation of Hillary Clinton, which might have had the Democratic Party pull her back from being the nominee, which would have changed the whole outcome, possibly. Jim Comey danced with the devil, and later on down the road talked about this great investigation the FBI conducted, because they had no subpoena power. They couldn't compel any testimony. They couldn't compel any investigation or search warrants, or they had to beg people to look at things. The interview of Hillary Clinton, in my view, was a sham. So he made a lot of mistakes. I think he's basically a good guy. He was lacking in common sense, and it's time for new leadership in the FBI. Yeah. And by going along with what he went along with, he threw the FBI under the bus and the reputation of the FBI under the bus. And that's what I am very mad about and have been very mad about for a long time. Well, I don't know what Jim Comey's told him, but from press reports, the deputy director, who I hope does not become the acting director, apparently, according to news reports, I guess they're true. I've never heard denials of them. The deputy director told the chief of staff at the White House months and months ago, quote, this whole thing about Russia is a bunch of BS. So, you know, what's going on here? I don't know. It defies logic.
That's the former deputy director of the FBI, James Carlstrom, talking to Martha McCollum last night on Fox. This is Sandy Rios in the Morning. I think the thing to make is the FBI, of course, is charged with investigations, both domestic in terms of criminal, but also terrorism. And we're going to talk about a lot of other things with our next guest, Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, but I do want to talk about the missteps of James Comey on terrorist investigations, because I think he might have an opinion. Tony is a retired U.S. Army Reserve Lieutenant Colonel. You have heard me talk to Tony before. You've seen him on television. He does great commentary. He's a counterterrorism expert. He wrote a book called Operation Dark Heart and The Last Line, which was the novel. And he joins us this morning. Tony, thanks for joining me.
Hey, Sandy, thanks for having me on. You'll be on.
Tony, I just was looking just at just a smattering of the terrorism cases that took place, investigations under Director Comey, and I'll just drop in a few just to get the conversation started, because I just would love to know what you think about how he handled things. The Tsarnaev brothers, you know, the Russians tried to warn us about them, and the FBI opted against investigating the Tsarnaev brothers, and those are the ones that did the Boston bombing. Of course, I think about the San Bernardino case, how they let that languish and how they let the wife go free for so long. I think about the Florida nightclub bombing where they invited members of the local mosque to come in and sit with them while they did interviews with suspects. This all happened under Comey. Just your thoughts about all of that, Tony.
Well, look, I mean, this is one of the things that was notable, as you mentioned, the Tsarnaev brothers and then the Orlando shooting. The FBI had a catch-and-release program where they identified someone and then released them. And this was multiplied all over the place. And I would say clearly, because I've talked to folks on the inside, James Comey sacrificed the security of the American people for the sake of political correctness. That's just not pushed too hard. And let me be clear on this. I've had my own experience to try to deal with them. And for your audience to understand, I've actually been undercover with the FBI, working parallel and sometimes with them on issues. And yet I could not get them to pay attention to specific national security issues, which were right up, within the last 2 years. I mean, they wouldn't take the report. That's how bad it was. And it's gotten to the point where they were discredited, not because of their capabilities, not because of their technology or reach. It was because of their leadership. There's the old saying that the fish rots from the head, and that's what was happening here. James Comey, and I don't agree with James Carlstrom. I like Mr. Carlstrom. I think he's a great guy, but no, I don't think James Comey was a good guy at all. I think he was a hack in an expensive suit, who, by the way, was essentially working behind the scenes to continue to implement this whole very flawed and dangerous political correct mentality. Combine that with a political ambition, which was secret, but I think now discernible by his actions of supporting Hillary Clinton and the Democrats and what they were doing. So those two things together, I think it's far more necessary, Sandy, to pick out someone who is putting on the sheep's clothing and trying, a wolf in sheep's clothing, which is, I think, what he was, rather than someone who was overtly supportive of the other side. This guy was very dangerous.
Tony, when I asked you to join me yesterday, it was before Comey was fired, and I wanted to talk to you about something that I discussed yesterday on the air because this is not, this is not the stuff of the workplace, because this is in the weeds Washington stuff, but it affects our national security, and that is that when Michael Flynn was fired, or let go, whatever, in his place was General McMaster, placed the head of the NSA. NSC.
What
are the acronym is? And so my understanding from what I read, Eli Lilly did an interesting piece on this, is McMaster has come at odds with the president, certainly on even using the terms radical Islamic terror. And so there was going to be a meeting yesterday between McMaster and Trump, and we didn't hear anything about that because of all the other things we're hearing. What do you know about that relationship and whether McMaster, his view is going to prevail?
Two points. Yeah, look, I think Eli Lake's reporting is accurate from what I understand. I can't comment much more than that. I know folks are working this issue behind the scenes. I know that for a fact. And regarding will the McMaster point of view prevail or not, I don't believe so. McMaster is let me be clear on this. I don't want to say be insulting, but he's a tanker. He's a guy that drives tanks and shoots big guns. His inexperience dealing with national security issues is becoming apparent. He's worked the Middle East and primarily the Middle East only. So, if you're a carpenter, everything looks like a hammer and a nail. It's one of those situations where I don't think he's actually qualified to the level necessary to be in that job. I think that inexperience sometimes results in going and looking at old solutions to new problems. And so to go back down the path of putting 5,000 more troops in Afghanistan and hoping for the best, that's not a strategy. And my friend and mentor, Tony Zinni, said it's far more important about what mission you assign troops rather than what the number is. So the big issue in my judgment is, you need to pick someone who's going to seek to achieve victory, whatever that is, not to continue to do the same things over and over in the past, which haven't worked. And that's what I've seen so far. of the H.R. McMaster time at the NSC. It's kind of, let's try it all one more time and see and hope for the best. We have to have people who innovate, who understand the issues, and Sandy, to break from the past 10, 15, 20 years to get us back into the mode of winning wars and ending them, not continuing to draw them out. And that's what some of the conflict is about right now.
Well, and again, before Comey was fired yesterday, this was building to be the big news story, and that is that there were McMaster and others inside the White House are pushing to beef up efforts in Afghanistan, whether it be troops, money, I'm not sure. And we're just, it's coming on the heels of, you know, these special forces guys being, was it 20 Marines killed last week? I think it's something like that. And then two special ops guys killed just in the last few days.
I think these kids sign up to win wars. They don't sign up to become kind of casualties to be, you know, reported on the evening news. So, no, we've got to get in our mind, Sandy, that we need to get back and win these things, not sit back and just kind of let this happen. And remember, we've been in Afghanistan for 13 years, and yet we have yet to actually achieve the victory that we start. We actually had a victory in 03-04. We let it go. So we've got to figure out a way to get back to that, and I just don't think the way McMaster's pushing this is going to get us there.
Well, if you were, let's say they tapped you and you're going to be in charge of this war in Afghanistan, would you really want to go back in there? And if you did, what would a win look like?
Oh, two things. No, I first off, you deal with Pakistan. You make it very clear because, Sandy, let me tell you why we have not won in Afghanistan, because we have refused to go into Pakistan. We've only done it once, the bin Laden raid, to go into where the Taliban is actually sitting. They're sitting in Afghanistan and destabilizing Afghanistan. So I've talked about this in Darkhar. You mentioned Darkhar. We need to have a Northern Ireland peace process. The Irish Republican Army continued to be successful in Northern Ireland until the Irish Republic told them stop. Well, the Irish Republic in this case is Pakistan. So you deal with that, you stop that, and then you push towards reconciliation. It's like, look, we don't care what government you have as long as it's a government which will ensure that we're not attacked. We don't have to dictate to them that they have a Jeffersonian democracy. It's just you need to make sure they can't create conditions for terrorists to train. That's it. That's all we should do. And it doesn't require a lot of troops to do that. It requires political will and understanding how to do this sort of things. So that's the victory, is preventing them from attacking us ever again and letting them go off on their own.
There is no time to really talk about this at length, but Petraeus, I can't even think of the name of it, the kind of warfare he established, it was his big idea about how to work with the Afghans.
Oh, counterinsurgency, nation building.
Wearing turbans and acting like you're turning a blind eye to child rape within the barracks.
Right, precisely. No, you can't do that. I mean, you need to hold up our values on that end. You cannot accept their values, or else you've undermined your very purpose for being there. So,
I'm really concerned about this, and have been for a long time. The rules of engagement under Obama's army were horrible. Made our guys sitting ducks. Has anything changed on the battlefield in regard to that?
Well, rules of engagement are always something that's very sensitive. But my understanding is obviously things have started to change, and the idea here is that you do not have to wait till you're basically bleeding before you can respond. Look, General Joe Dunford, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, is a great leader. You got Jim Mattis over there. General Mattis is the Secretary of Defense. Trust me, things are going to change over there. Maybe not as quickly as some would like, but things are changing, and I think that the changes are going to be much for the better. So,
all right. So you sound optimistic, Tony, this morning. More optimistic.
Well, I do. No, I know these guys. So, look, I trust Joe Dunford. I think he's going to be he's an amazing chairman. He's done well, very well, despite the. First year being under President Obama, and I think General Mattis is going to give him all the leeway he needs to be a successful chairman of the Joint Chiefs. And I see Joe Votel, the commander of Central Command, is very aggressive. Tony Thomas, the commander of SOCOM, another aggressive general. Mark Milley, the chief of staff of the Army. These men, Sandy, all have the idea of how to actually fix the defense establishment. They just got to have the time and space to do it. So I think President Trump's got a great defense team, and he's just got to let them do their job and make a few adjustments, too, in the meantime.
All right. So if McMaster is not, in your view, the right person for a national security advisor, and I think most of us that are reading about this would agree with you, I know there was a conversation with John Bolton just last week. What would you think if I don't even know if you can give a name. Is there someone that comes to your mind that you think you'd like to see in that position?
The honest answer is I think a bunch of us are behind the scenes thinking about that very question right now. Who would be optimal? And I don't have an answer at this point. I was in discussions over the past few days on that issue, and I think there'll be more coming up next couple weeks. But no, clearly that's an issue, and it's a very Susan Rice should never have been in that position when she was, that person in that position touches everything in national security. That's everything from foreign counterintelligence, what the FBI does, all the way up to national security stuff, and frankly, space issues and things like Strategic Defense Initiative and all this sort of thing. So that person has to have a vast understanding and a somewhat detailed understanding of all these very complex issues. And again, I don't mean to demean General McMaster. I just don't think he was equipped to deal with the issues he's now looking at. I think he's you need someone who's a broader, one of my dear friends is Bud McFarland. And Bud and I have had some great conversations about when he was National Security Advisor to President Reagan. So trust me, I have some inside understanding of what that job entails. And you need to have someone who has an ability to both learn, adapt, and figure out things on the fly and be very, very effective. And that's who needs to be selected.
All right. Well, we'll hope and pray for that. Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, author of Operation Dark Heart. Tony, thank you so much for your time this morning. And thank you for your service, as always.
Sure thing.
All right, talk to you soon. All right, well, we're going to take a break here. And when we come back, we're going to come back to the James Comey situation. There's just lots of things happening. I think there's going to be a meeting in the Senate this morning. Of course, the Democratic senators it took them an hour, to come out with their party line, which is that this was Trump fired James Comey because Comey was investigating him for his ties to Russia, his cooperation with Russia. That's the line, the official line. We'll talk about that when we return. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk. All right, that's Stars and Stripes. That's one of my favorite John Philip Sousa songs. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk. John Philip Sousa, by the way, was the first Marine Corps band director. And by the way, the Marine Corps band still is fabulous. If you have a chance to hear them in Washington, D.C., it is an absolute treat. They, especially on this particular weekend, they'll be performing. But every Friday night here in Washington, there is the Marine Corps Evening Parade. Which takes place at the same barracks, the same area, it's 8th Street and I, where John Philip Sousa lived and worked and wrote. It's just an amazing thing. And you see the band and the color guard, and they time it such, it's a commandant's review, they time it such that the sun goes down before as taps is played and the color, the flag is drawn. It's just amazing. And if you've never been to that in Washington, that's something to add to your list. And they certainly do perform John Philip Sousa marches. It is really a thrill. Well, of course, that really captures the spirit of what it means to be the American warrior. There's no other warrior in the world like that. I mean, they murder and kill efficiently, but the American warrior is taught to do so with honor. And maybe, they probably inherited that from their British roots. I don't know how the British were able to, somehow they fell away from that during the Revolutionary War. But America's goal and standards for their soldiers are very high. And a lot of that is circles around a nobler way of doing things. It goes back to the time of Washington. It was chaplain for his troops. It was love of country and honor. And you don't just take life for the joy of it. And that's, I think, what our soldiers in Iraq, Afghanistan, these men that we see going out and women serving their country with such great distinction and honor, it really is a thing to behold. Thank God for our soldiers. I know that many of you listening are in various forts around the country, and we can't tell you how much and how grateful we are for your service. World War II, of course, our numbers are dwindling of the veterans of World War II. Many of us had dads that fought in World War II. Many of you had grandfathers, and I just urge you, if they're still living, to get their stories, record them, thank them. If you've ever been to these honor flights, if your father or your relative has never been to one, they are still happening. The honor flights are fabulous. That's where they take World War II veterans from all over the country, bring them to D.C., take them to the World War II Memorial, give them this fabulous tribute at both airports. They have music of the 40s playing live. It is really something. I've seen these old men in wheelchairs and some able still to walk just weep as they go through this barrage of people cheering and waving flags. It's a beautiful thing. So if you've never done the honor flight for your father or your grandfather, it's something to look for. Well, just to give the statistics again, we know that most World War II veterans are mostly in their 90s, and they are dying at a rate of about 492 a day. The World War II Museum by here in D.C., by the way, is working to expand their exhibits and their oral histories all the time, and that's also a great place to come to remember 16 million men served in World War II. And there are less than 855,000 of them alive today. So there was a filmmaker, his name is Stephen Klaus, who does videos, beautiful videos. He's done a lot of them. And he has produced a video to talk about how we should feel about these dying men. It's called Just a Common Soldier. It's based on a poem by Lawrence Vancourt. And it is narrated by an actor, Tony LoBianco. I wanted to share it with you today because I think it really, if anything, expresses how so many of us feel about these older men and women, mostly men now for sure, who served their country during one of the fiercest wars on record, World War II. Let's listen to this tribute by Tony LoBianco.
He was getting old and paunchy, and his hair was falling fast. And he sat around the Legion telling stories of the past, of a war that he had fought in, and the deeds that he had done, and his exploits with his buddies. They were heroes, every one. And though sometimes to his neighbors his tales became a joke, all his Legion buddies listened, for they knew whereof he spoke. But we'll hear his tales no longer, for old Bill has passed away. The world's a little poorer, for a soldier died today. He will not be mourned by many, just his children and his wife. For he lived an ordinary and quite uneventful life. He held a job and raised a family, quietly going his own way. And the world won't note his passing, though a soldier died today. When politicians leave this earth, their bodies lie in state, while thousands note their passing and proclaim that they were great. Papers tell their whole life stories from the time that they were young. But the passing of a soldier goes unnoticed and unsung. Is the greatest contribution to the welfare of our land a guy who breaks his promise and cons his fellow man? Or the ordinary fellow who in times of war and strife goes off to serve his country and offers up his life? A politician's stipend and the style in which he lives are sometimes disproportionate to the service that he gives, while the ordinary soldier who has offered up his all is paid off with a medal, perhaps a pension, small. It's so easy to forget them, for it was so long ago that the old Bills of our country went to battle. But we know it was not the politicians with their compromises and ploys who won for us the freedom that our country now enjoys. Should you find yourself in danger with your enemies at hand, would you want a politician with his ever-shifting stand? Or would you prefer a soldier who has sworn to defend his home, his kin, and country, and would fight until the end? He was just a common soldier, and his ranks are growing thin. But his presence should remind us we may need his like again. For when countries are in conflict, then we find the soldier's part is to clean up all the troubles that the politicians start. If we cannot do him honor while he's here to hear the praise, then at least let's give him homage at the ending of his days. Perhaps just a simple headline in a paper that would say, "Our country is in mourning. A soldier died today."
Sandy Rios in the Morning with you. That can be found at Just a Common Soldier, produced by Stephen Klaus and narrated by Tony Lobianco. And so on behalf of my father, my father-in-law, my other father-in-law, Vietnam veteran, Master Sergeant, served faithfully, my husband, who served in a different way with the Federal Bureau of Investigation, for all of you men and women out there who have placed your lives on the line in service of your country, we thank you from the bottom of our hearts. We thank you. And we just ask again that your service, remember, we serve as unto the Lord, which is a different standard. And it doesn't matter what the politicians say, what the news headlines say, says, we play to one person, and that is the God of the universe, who knows what we did. He knows. And so we thank you, and I hope that you enjoy your families while at the same time bringing meaning to this day. This is Sandy Rios in the Morning on AFR Talk.